Hello, my name is Louise Allen and I'm the author of The Sisters Song. On the 14th of June 2018, there was an event at the Centre for Stories that was part of the Literary Mixers series in which I had a conversation with Amanda Curtin. I'm going to start today by reading an excerpt from my book. This is from quite early in the story when Nora has been learning piano and singing as well from her grandmother. And together her and her grandmother decide to put on a little performance, and Ida is invited in to have a listen. So Nora's very young at this stage and it's the beginning of her musical career. "Next I will sing Bist du bei mir by Johann Sebastian Bach," said Nora. "I think Mum wants me," I said, and stood to leave. "Oh, stay and listen, Ida," said Grandma. "It's so nice to have an audience." I flopped back in the chair, looking at my lap rather than at Nora, not even trying to hide my reluctance. Nora began to play, and then to sing.
"Bist du bei mir?"
My body stilled at the sound of her voice, but I kept my head down, determined not to look up.
"Geh ich mit Freuden."
Her voice sounded like a tiny bell. I wanted to glance up, but I kept my eyes on my hands, clasped together in my lap.
"Zum Sterben und zu meiner Ruh."
I couldn't help but glance up. Nora was swaying back and forth as she sang, her hands rising and falling over the keys. I quickly averted my eyes.
"Ach, wie vergnügt, versah mein Ende."
I tried to hold myself rigid, but her voice kept coming, tender, like a caress.
"Es drückten deine schönen Hände mir die getreuen Augen zu."
She was still trying to come in, through my skin and my ears, and in the end I covered them with my hands. I didn't let her in. I didn't hear the last lines of the song, and I didn't know she'd finished until I looked up. Grandma and Nora were staring at me. I uncovered my ears and stared back at them. "Aren't you going to clap?" asked Nora. I glared at her, hoping my hands might jump up and clap all by themselves. But they didn't. "Didn't you like it?" Nora's brow was furrowed. I kept eyeing her, and then, even though I didn't mean it, and even though I knew it was the most unkind and vicious thing I could do, I shook my head. Nora's face dropped. She blinked. She was on the verge of tears. I could feel Grandma's eyes boring into me. I jumped up and ran out, slamming the door after me. Behind the chaff shed, I sat on my haunches and cried while the chickens clucked and pecked at the ground around me. "Shut up," I said, shooing one away. "Just shut up." Music, beautiful music. I wanted to make it too, but it was just dots and lines on a page that I couldn't read. The keys might as well have been sticks for all the sound I could create. As for singing, my voice couldn't have made a melody even if I'd had lessons from Dame Nellie herself. I couldn't make music. I couldn't do what Nora had done, and I'd never be able to. That night at dinner, I didn't meet Nora's eyes, and later, when we went to bed, I kept to my side and she to hers. To open the conversation on the 14th, I started by reading a letter that I had written to Amanda that kind of kicked the proceedings off. So here it is. "Dear Amanda, we all see the wins and triumphs of this business. They're all over our social media feeds. The signed contracts, the books on shelves, the bestseller lists, the award nominations. But for most of us, that's a distant nebula. Many of us are still plodding the pathway, experiencing the snags, disappointments, and heartbreaks that comprise the long and arduous journey to publication. We're sitting at our desks, pounding out words on our keyboards, gritting our teeth as we plumb the depths of our minds and imaginings, and sighing heavily as we stare out our windows for the 47th time that day, hoping for inspiration. We're trying to snatch writing time between work and sleep, or after the kids are in bed, or as we sip our fourth coffee for the day and it's only 6 a.m. All this to create a story that might never greet the eye of a reader. Sometimes we wonder why the hell we're doing it. Is it really worth it? Should we just give up now? Why do we do it? What keeps us going? How do we deal with the disappointments? How do we, time and again, pick up the pieces of our shattered confidence and give it one more try? How do we return to our keyboards when everyone is telling us how impossible it is to get published these days? How do we keep going for years on end with no promise we'll ever reach our goal? How do we not give up hope? Shall we start by exploring some of these questions? I've discovered that one of the best resources in this business is other writers who've been there and done that, who'll tell you about their own experiences and remind you that it is possible. So keep going and don't give up. By the way, you were one of those writers for me. Love, Louise. So that was the letter that commenced the evening. We talked a lot about my journey towards publication, which is a long and fairly arduous one. But I must say, looking back, that all seems, it doesn't seem as long and arduous as it was. It was 6 years. I did a number of courses and things to start with, and workshops, and I really devoted myself to trying to learn the craft. And that was in 2010. And then 2012 is when I really sat down to start writing my novel. So it was 6 years and many, many drafts from the beginning to the end. During that time, I had a number of disappointments and a number of successes. And the first success was getting a residential fellowship to Varuna, which I was awarded in 2014. The second success came towards the end of that year, and that was getting shortlisted for the TAG Hungerford Award. But I'll just add that in between that, I'd actually been rejected for a manuscript development program. And I was still licking my wounds from that, really, when the notification that I'd been shortlisted for the Hungerford came along. The Hungerford shortlisting came in, I was notified in November, and then I had to wait until March the following year in 2015 to hear whether we'd won or not. And I was one of five shortlisted people. I turned up on the night with the whole family in tow, and of course they announced the winner, and it was not my book. And that was probably the biggest disappointment of my career. I won't say my life, because that's perhaps being a bit melodramatic, but it certainly was of my career. And we were given a bottle of champagne as a consolation prize that night, and I drank probably most of it and cried a lot into my glass, saying, what the hell am I doing? Why don't I give up? I'm so stupid to be middle-aged and trying to do this pipe dream that I have of writing a book and getting published. I'm just a boring middle-aged woman writing a boring story and no one's ever going to want to read it. And it kind of, that was the tone for the night that I repeated over and over. Anyway, within 24 hours, I had pulled myself back together and I was back at my desk rewriting my manuscript yet again. I let myself cry, have my disappointment, got loads and loads and loads of supportive emails, including one from Amanda Curtin. That was a beautiful email telling me to keep going. And so I pulled myself together and rewrote it, found a writing group of another two doctors who were also writers, and we swapped chapters with each other as we wrote. And I sent it off to an agent, and the agent I rang her because that was how she wanted to be contacted, which that's another tip that I probably should give, actually, because it is handy to look up exactly how agents want to be contacted, because some, like this one in particular, wanted a phone call rather than an email. So I did. I practiced my what I was going to say in front of the mirror about three times. I stood there repeating it to myself over and over what I was going to say. And then as soon as she picked up the phone, I launched into my spiel, and I did not stop until she interrupted. And then she asked me to send my manuscript. And so I did. About 3 weeks later, she phoned me up, and here is the rest of the story. She rang me up and spent about 20 minutes on the phone telling me, she's very blunt, telling me in no uncertain terms all the things that were wrong with my book. But then at the end she said, so I don't know what you think of that, whether, you know, she said, it's up to you, you mightn't want to make those changes, but, you know, what are you thinking about that? And I said, straight away, I just said, no, I'm happy. No, thank you. Thank you. No, for telling me all of that. No, I'm happy to make those changes. And all the time thinking, oh, my God, you know. But I didn't want to lose that. You know, I'd had an agent, someone from the publishing industry, give me feedback, and I wasn't going to dismiss it. And so I got off the phone, and I was quite shaken because it was a major, major rewrite. But as soon as I'd said that to her, that I was open to her feedback, I could almost hear her relax too and think, oh, and she said, oh, good, good. Oh, okay, well, I'll send you your annotated manuscript and some notes that I've made. And she did. She sent it, and this was all free. And so it was in feedback from inside the industry for free. She'd annotated just about every page of my manuscript. She sent me three pages of notes, and I said about rewriting it, and she's my agent now. When I sent it back to her, she accepted it.
This is such an interesting thing for people to hear, because in a sense, it's when rejection is actually success, because the rejection that you got back came with a whole lot of information, a whole lot of advice, of huge value. If you actually put a dollar figure on that,
yes,
you probably couldn't have afforded it.
No, that's right.
So you got this rejection on one hand, and in the same offering, there was this big success, and you made something of it. And that's the way that we handle success, failures and
yes,
rejections, is often the way we find our way through to success. So it was a huge lesson to learn.
Yes. There were things that she said that I didn't necessarily agree with. I agreed
with
90%, but there were things that she didn't. And even some of her suggestions for how I could overcome it, I didn't agree with. But what she was saying really was, there is a problem with that area. And so I had to sit on my own and think, okay, I don't know that her suggestion for how to fix this is going to work, but or I don't like it. But, okay, I accept there's a problem with this character. What am I going to do, you know, and sit back and work it. And that's when I actually approached Jackie Garton-Smith, who's here tonight, and Michelle Johnson, and the three of us are doctors who write, and we were at that point at the same, very similar stage in our writing our novels. And I emailed them and said, how about we form a writing group? And so the three of us formed a writing group, and we rewrote our first chapters and swapped them with each other, and then we met, and we'd give each other feedback as we went through then. And that's how I rewrote my novel after I got the agent's feedback. And Michelle and I, and Jackie's on the way, have both been published since, so...
Do you think luck plays any role in this whole process?
I do. Now, going right back even to the luck of being born in Australia, where I get a good education, being born white in Australia, which has allowed me privileges, being born at this time, which as a woman, once upon a time, I mightn't have had access to an education and a career. All of those, you know, I've won the lottery. Being given a good brain to be able to write a novel, all of those are luck. That's, you know, it mightn't have worked out that way. So right from the outset, right from conception. But I think there's luck in that Sue liked my novel for the Hungerford, because without that shortlisting, or Sue and a couple of others, without that shortlisting, you know, it might have been another year or two or three or whatever. Mm-hmm.